Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome once again to the Chelsea podcast. I'm Chaz, pleased to be back with you. And of course, as ever, I have the magnificent Mooch with me. How are you, mate?
Oi. Yeah, I'm good, man.
Yeah, it all seems a little bit shinier, doesn't it?
Yeah, these midweek records are always easier to do when there's a W on the weekend.
Well, everything's easier to do when there's a W on the weekend, if truth be told. I mean, like getting out of bleeding bed. It was nice to be able to enjoy a full weekend without any deepening of the misery. we're back on to talk about the Sheffield United game on Saturday, and with us tonight... I'm very pleased to bring on board a season ticket holder of some 25 years, and he's been going a lot longer than that, and a very dear friend of mine, Mr. Jack Riley. Jack, how are you doing, mate?
Not too bad at all, sir. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks so much for joining us. So just before we go on, for many people won't know you, but talk about your background with Chelsea. Where did it all start for you?
I was lucky enough to be born and raised on sort of Burnaby Street in the Lots Road sort of area, just by the power station and where before the harbour even existed and all that sort of thing. I always sort of joke to people, because you know what, since we've been good, it's like, oh yeah, how long you've been a Chelsea fan, eh? Glory hunter. I always sort of joke now that my old man was Chelsea, my two older brothers were Chelsea, all the kids at school were Chelsea, all my neighbours were Chelsea, and conformity has never paid off so handsomely. And then we've had the past couple of seasons, that joke runs a bit dry. But
it's all going to come good again, mate. It's all cyclical.
Oh, God, one can only hope. Yeah. And then in terms of sort of coming to the matches, I remember being sort of last sort of year of primary school, a couple of boys said, oh, we're going to go become Chelsea members. This was October 84. And I said, oh, okay, then yeah, I'll join you for that. And they went for about one or two seasons, and I've been coming ever since, really.
That was about the same time I first became a member as well. Weirdly. There we go. What did you make of this weekend's offering? I mean, obviously we spoke about it briefly after the game, but I suppose a win's a win, really, more than anything else, isn't it?
I mean, you can only beat what's put in front of you. I mean... Yeah. We'd like to think that with a team that come along and played pretty poorly. I mean, like a couple of people around me in the West, I sit on the halfway line of the West Lower, a couple of people around were saying this is a poorer team as we've seen at the Bridge for quite some time. So in one sense, 2-0 feels a bit shortchanged, and you sort of begin, was it a good enough performance or whatnot? But then we've played sort of teams as equally bad and then somehow lost. So a win's a win. You just got to take what's there, as it were.
Yeah, and I think there was, we'll come on to the game more as a whole in a minute, but I think there was enough there, certainly in the second half, that, even the most miserable old bastards would hopefully have walked away with a smile on their face. The first thing that going back to the very start, I suppose the first thing that stood out to me was the starting lineup. It was a very obvious 4-2-3-1, which we've been talking about on the show for the last couple of weeks. And Mooch, no start for Enzo.
No.
What did you make of that?
I think it's a decision the coach has made because he's not been doing one of his primary tasks, which is to sort of progress the ball to the strikers in the final third. And he should be doing that more. He should be getting more assists. He should be creating more. And we've not been doing that. So,
contentious. So, I mean, there was always the, I suppose there's an argument to say that it might just be, and I'm sure he would say in public, I've just given him a rest or this, that, and the other. There's been no sort of obvious criticism of him. But I mean, when we play in this formation, or if we're going to continue playing in this formation going forward, somebody is going to dip out. And I don't suppose it will be Enzo simply because of how much we've paid for him. But do you think it was possibly Jack a little kind of a nudge on behalf of Potch to say, you know, pick your game up, son, you know, you're not guaranteed a spot.
I mean, first of all, in terms of the formation, I think that we should play the 4-2-3-1 more regularly when we're playing these low block sides. We want to have the extra attacker in a bit of that, whether it's creativity or speed or whatever, you know, particular facet of the game we want to utilise at that point. There's no point in having three sort of central midfielders against a Sheffield United, a Luton, you know, these sorts of teams. So it was welcome to sort of see that. Obviously against sort of more quality opposition, we'll probably want to go three in midfield. In terms of dropping Enzo, it probably is a case of a bit of everything. He's no doubt there's got to be rotation. It's like eight games in December, I think it is. Everybody plays all in a sort of packed schedule when the weather's getting bad and more risk of injury. So I think all of them are going to get a rest at some point. And maybe this was the game he decided we could do without Enzo. But on the other hand, I mean, he's, you know, he's doing all right, but you don't pay 107 million for all right, do you? And that's that's where he's probably sort of saying, look, you know, you kind of are expendable at the moment, mate. So you've got to buck up your game a bit if you want to make yourself undroppable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I hope he does respond. And it's what was quite interesting was to note that it was a year on from the World Cup final today. Mm. And to come from that and to being dropped against Sheffield United, it must be a bit of a come down for the poor lad. But yeah, I think
it's also interesting that, especially, I know we might touch on this a little bit later, but the fact that Connor wasn't dropped and some of the language that Potch has been sort of the coded sort of messages that, you know, he may be sold because the sporting directors see this as a pure profit sort of transaction. But Potch doesn't want him to go. You know, he's started pretty much every game and played like the 90 minutes for pretty much every game, apart from the ones he might have had to leave early for. but he's a player that Potch likes. He's a player that he thinks we should have in the team, and it's the type of player that we need in the team at the moment, a dynamo who gives us all. And dropping your, you know, star player or your 100 million pound midfielder and keeping Connor in is a clear message to the board. Right, cool, don't sell this guy.
It's a very good point. And, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, there was numerous people from various outlets, including the gentleman of Match of the Day, saying that he's been Palmer has been our most significant player this season. And this, again, it's not having a go at Palmer.
Here we go.
It's not having a go at Palmer. I think Palmer's having a great season. But I think the one player that, you know, has been an eight every game. Admittedly, he got himself sent off. But, you know, he's been an eight every game. He's been absolutely trying to make things happen every game. It has been Connor. And I think, I hope you're right. And as you say, all the language coming out from, all the language coming from Potch is definitely, you know, don't sell him. And all the language from the fan base as well. You know, nobody in the fan base wants to see Connor go. And I think it would be, really would be the last straw if he were to. Having said all that, and having lauded him to the skies, I mean, I, again, watching the game back, on the website after having been there. Again, I'd probably calm down. I got a better view of it, this, that, and the other. But the thing I kept thinking to myself after the first half was, I've never seen a team dominate one half of football so much and yet not look anywhere near getting close to scoring a goal. I mean, what did you make of that first half? It was because it was clearly we weren't really at any point in any kind of threat. But my God, we made hard work of it, didn't we?
I think we had 80% of possession in the first half, and four shots on goal, one on target. It was frustrating. It was the story of the season so far. It was, okay, cool. We can keep the ball. We can knock it about. But when it gets to the business end, it just stifles out. And stuck with doing what most teams of that level will be doing against us, and just putting players behind the ball and trying to hang into the game. And it would have worked if we hadn't have made a breakthrough in the second half, because we would have been at panic stations again. And we're going to need to figure out how to unlock these teams with all this possession sooner and relieve that pressure and be a bit more confident.
Unlike previous games, you know, I agree. But unlike some of the previous games where we failed to break through the low block, I don't really strongly feel like that was at least 50% down to Sheffield United being really good. I mean, I thought, Jack, I don't know about you, mate, because I'm at the back of the Matthew Harding lower, so I suppose I'm slightly elevated, and I know you're less high up in the West Stand, but the movement for me seemed to be so poor in out front four. There were so many times where, and this has been said by people among our friends, that quite often when the ball gets to Thiago Silva, he'll almost stop. He'll have a little look, he'll stop, and then everything will slow down and he'll pass the ball sideways. And in our little friendship group, he's taken a bit of stick for that from one or two people. But I actually think it's because the movement in front of him so often is so poor. And in the first half, I just felt like, lads, you've got to try and get yourself into some kind of space, and you're just not doing it. Is that the sense that you got, or I don't know? I mean, as I say, from where I was sat, that seemed to be the case for me. There was a lot. It was getting very tense.
We did make that comment in the West, and that goes to pace of play. And again, the amount of times then when you're saying like Silva picks up the ball or someone like that, then when they have to look up and there's nobody moving, and then they pass it sideways, that just gives the defence time to get back, get in front of the ball. And, you know, we're not turning them around. We're not making them run at their own goal. We're not going to sort of necessarily get that early ball in and take those chances. Yeah. And a couple of things about that is, I mean, obviously, first of all, the movement is bad. And it was said we were grumbling about it in the West. I think because we're a bit shy on confidence and a bit young, everybody's trying to play the percentage ball. And it feels a bit like, at times, dare I say, a sorry ball in the latter stages of the Tuchel era, where we were just passing sideways for no particular reason. And it's like the goal's over there when you're actually going to move the ball forward. And so, sometimes I wonder if it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the amount of times I have seen people making runs, maybe not so much in that first half, but certainly second half and other games during the season, the past couple of years, someone makes to run and nobody passes to him. And then they think, well, sod that, I'm not going to make the run then. But then when they look up, that person's not making the run, so the pass isn't, you know, which has to come first.
I mean, you alluded to confidence as well, and that was one thing I did think is that, and you know, I think Jack makes a very good point, you know, playing the percentage pass comes from, and yeah, obviously we want to, you know, especially given how some of our passing has been, obviously we want to maintain possession. That's got to be the first, the first thing that you keep safe. But do you think it's a confidence issue? Do you think it's about this team sort of, you know, having had a few knockbacks, that it's not, there's no one really wanting to sort of risk a kind of, Even in the final third, no one really wanted to risk a big error. Certainly not in the middle of the park, anyway.
Well, I think it's, I feel the only player who is playing with that confidence is Cole Palmer. And he's the only one who's willing to sort of, make that pass, but also take on players. Sterling can take on players. He's not really going to play that sort of scything pass. Enzo, I don't know. I just don't know why he's not been playing the ball forward. I don't know why. And Connor, you know, I feel I want to see him take more shots. I just don't know if it's the lack of confidence or the lack of playing together.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, but then again, that front five has played a lot of games together. Now we're halfway through the season. There's not been a crazy amount of changes from the midfield and you know the front three with Jackson, Sterling, and Cole Palmer. You know, there's Mudrick has made a couple of appearances, but generally it's the same sort of team.
I mean,
if I can interrupt you there, Chaz, even to that, it's like then do they not talk to each other on the training pitch?
Mm.
I mean, surely it should be like. I mean, like the people I always use as an example of it all becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy was York, Cole and Beckham. Whenever Beckham picked up the ball, he'd take two touches and he'd pump it towards a penalty spot. He didn't look up half the time because he knew that Cole or York was going to be there. And consequently, whenever he picked up the ball, either one of them who was ever closest gone tearing towards a penalty spot because they know he's going to pump in an early ball. But that's obviously then being built up on the training ground. So these guys not saying, look, as soon as you pick up the ball, I'm going to run near post. Be looking for me there or whatever, you know.
I'll say this. I will say this, and I mentioned it in the notes. I don't know what you think of it. But I think, you know, Nicholas Jackson's had a lot of stick this season. Some of it has been deserved. Quite a lot of it has been deserved, in fact. But I felt he was always moving. He was always looking to make a little run inside, you know, and if he'd have got the ball, it might not have come to anything, but he was always trying to lose a marker. He was always trying to find a little bit of space. And there weren't that many other players trying to do that. Mudrick did it with his pace a couple of times. Palmer did do a little shimmy and a run a couple of times. I thought he didn't have I didn't think anyone had a particularly outstanding first half. But, yeah, I mean, I just thought that Jackson was sort of doing the kind of movement that I would expect from the team as a whole. He was looking to make those kind of little darting runs that, you know, that would have been, you know, the sort of Cole and York-esque runs of the past.
Trouble is, if you played it to him, he'd probably take six touches in the box and fall over.
Yeah.
Because I've been pretty harsh on him. I always sort of say when new player comes in, particularly from a different league and this, that, and the other, so you've got to give them a first season. They're likely to be crap. It's really second season upon which you judge them. And I look at, say, Mudrick, I see he's running around. I can sort of see why people were interested in him and he might be able to come good, etc. I look at Jackson and I'm kind of not seeing it. I don't really see that he's ever going to come good in the way that we want him to. I hope I'm wrong on that, obviously. But I mean, one of the things I think he could definitely benefit from, there was when Carlo was in charge of Everton and he had Calvert-Lewin, and he said to him, look, you keep taking too many touches in the box. So I had a great striker and he never took one touch in the box in Zaghi. And that was just when Calvert-Lewin then suddenly went great, got into the England team before then a litany of injuries has made him be rubbish again. But I was thinking if he could just have that one conversation with Carlo and say, like, one touch shoot, hopefully it'd be that much better.
I mean, I think the other thing you have to bear in mind as well is that, you know, he probably wouldn't have expected to be he wouldn't have expected to be, you know, our one lone striker, one central spearhead striker at the beginning of the season, certainly after. What had happened in the preseason, he would have been playing off Ngunku or you know, like going a bit wider. I mean, he did do that a bit in the second half, didn't he? And probably contributed a little bit more. But
it's interesting to hear his interview. They had an interview with in the Standard.
I read a couple of the quotes.
Yeah, which I like. I like the fact that it's not just boring. And he's come, for anyone who's not seen it, he's basically said, I think I'm doing okay. And essentially, if you think I'm doing shit, you don't know football. And the players and the criticism that I'm and the feedback that I'm listening to is from one person, and that's the manager. And you know, it's never an easy job to be a striker or a player here at Chelsea. There's lots of players who've listened, who people have shat on. The fans and the media have said, okay, you're not cutting the mustard, and they've gone on to huge things, namely Mo Salah and De Bruyne.
He talked about those two, didn't he? Yeah.
Putting himself in.
Yeah.
So, but you know, he's backed himself. The coach is backing him, and I hope he can back up his mouth and he can come good with it.
I'd love him to.
Yeah. I mean, I love the attitude, and I think the impression you get from him, he's a sweet bloke, and he's usually got a smile on his face, and you know, he wants to do well. So let's see if he turns it around. And in fairness to him, you know, he's possibly not getting the ball as much when he wants it, where he would like it, etc., etc. And I'm not saying that he's entirely blameless in that. He needs to be making the right run at the right time. But, you know, there's a combination of things, and maybe we're not quite seeing the best of him yet. But I take your point, Jack. You know, clearly there are players who've come into this side and have made more of an immediate impact. Having said that, he's our top scorer. So whatever, you know, whichever way you slice it, he is. Let's have a look at the much vaunted tweak that Poch made at half-time. It did seem to really change things. I mean, I've said on here a number of times that I've always thought that Palmer is better as a number 10, but actually moving him out wide seemed to galvanise him, really. And I think Sterling had a much better game in the second half too. So chalk one up to Poch. Should we, you know, the Poch out crew should be silenced for another week?
I think, yeah, chalk it up to Poch. I mean, I'm quick enough to get on his back when he doesn't make changes in certain games, and you know, when it seems obvious from the stands that there's something happening in the game, someone's not having a good game and whatnot. So when he actually does something and it works, you've got to give the people, the person in the other end of it, and give them the credit. I mean, and one of the things you're saying, like the Poch out crew, I'm very much not one of those, because I think he's only 4 months in, and who else is going to come to this poison chalice if we was to sack him tomorrow for whatever particular reason? Would there be no quality manager be mad enough to come in and do this? And one of the things I was going to say about him particularly as well is he was brought in with this reputation of working well with youth and integrating sort of younger players. And that's great, because we've got a lot of young players. But the problem is he usually has a senior squad in the first place, and he's talking about bringing in two or three younger players rather than the whole sort of litany of them. And I equate it to, he's a very good babysitter who's suddenly now been made matron of a nursery, of 30 kids. And it's like, that's not the same job. And you can't expect him to be brilliant sort of at doing that. So I've got a lot of sympathy for his situation as a whole. And most definitely at this stage, at least, not Poch out. But back to the answering the question, yes, I think we have to give him credit for making that change.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, of course, is that he's now also making, or has, subsequent to the summer window shutting, he made all of the right noises, as far as I'm concerned, about saying, I need to be more involved. You know, I think he, as much as anybody was, you know, as much as any fan would have been pissed off about our inability to sign another striker while all these wingers kept coming in. So, yeah, I mean, I think we said last week that nobody we really wanted to give too much time was saying Poch out, but hopefully it would have silenced people a little bit, and hopefully the Newcastle game will do likewise. I mean, the first goal, it really was a smashing goal. It was a very, very patient build-up, started by Thiago Silva sort of diving in and intercepting a ball quite high up the pitch, probably in the middle third of the pitch, but certainly well into Sheffield United's half. And then we moved it around with pace. We moved the ball around with pace. And, you know, they had absolutely no answer to it. And it was a great finish by Palmer. Why aren't we doing that more often?
I don't know. Oz Potch.
Well, I don't know, but, you know, is it? And this is the thing. I'm not sure. Is that something? I mean, surely you're not having to say to players, one touch and pass, one touch and pass, get into space. Surely it's not
that's like half the training drills footballers do and all that. Yeah. But I mean, and that might be also a reason why he often seems to be cutting quite a frustrated figure on the sideline. As we were saying earlier on, we should be playing with pace against low block teams, not only just moving it forward, but also trying to, even if we're going left to right, play that with pace because you stretch them one
shift them
the
across
other and hopefully find a bit of space. So it was then when the goal goes in, because we played the ball around with a bit of pace, it's like, shouldn't need to be a eureka moment, but fingers crossed the lads learn from it and maybe then sort of going, you know, he goes in Monday morning to see, this is what I've been saying, this is what you've got to be doing, and pick up on it, who knows.
I mean, the second goal, by contrast, was, well, bizarre, frankly. I mean, were you surprised it stood, Mooch? Because, I mean, I was standing in the Matthew Harding with a few mates going, yeah, no, he's not going to give that. You know, well, that's going to be VAR'd. It was a weird comment. And then, you know, should we have had a penalty? Should it have been an offside? I don't know. But anyway.
It was a bit strange. And it was just that sort of no man's land of do we not, it's horrible. but it counted. It was a weird goal. It was a comedy of errors, really, you know, and then Jackson put it away. One touch.
Deadly finishing.
Brozier missed a chance that was just as close. Jackson, yeah, give him props.
And I think Sterling could have probably had a third. Could have got us the third as well. I think he was through on goal, bit unlucky, sort of tried to nutmeg the keeper. So I think we could have scored more, but it's just that it's breaking the seal. You know, it's getting that first.
I mean, there were a couple, talking about those long balls, Jack. There were a couple of, there's the one you alluded to there, Mooch. That was a tremendous ball. That was Thiago Silva as well, I think. And there was a lovely long pass from Caicedo. Earlier in the game, I'm trying to remember who that went through to. That might have been Sterling as well. But anyway, you know. But even then, as I say, okay, you don't just want to necessarily lump it forward all the time. But when the players are making the right runs, we have those passes in our armory, don't we?
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire? Huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Fucking lump it. I couldn't give a fuck.
I mean,
it's a scything through ball. That's what I want to see. You know, if it's Jackson, Sterling, someone on the end of it, and, you know, we get that Gary Neville moment. I don't care at this point in the season.
I mean, to be fair, there was probably more than there has been even for the whole of the rest of the season. The number of times you heard people going, shoot! On Saturday was a bit like, come on, lads, come on.
Yeah.
Put one in on goal at least. Anyway, we got there. Yeah. I mean, we had a the from the beginning of that half to about 5 or 10 minutes after the second goal, I thought we played really well. We did look really threatening. As you say, we should have had a couple more. And then the game sort of slightly meandered to a close. Jack, were you surprised that, given all that, I mean, we looked absolutely under no threat whatsoever, but were you surprised that Nkunku didn't get a run out, or do you think that was a good decision?
I think I was very much expecting to see him. As soon as we went 2 up, I said, he's coming on 70 minutes. He'll get sort of 20, 25 minutes to play. So I was surprised that he didn't go with that. But on the other hand, he knows the players best. He's probably looking at what keeps happening with James and probably thought, you know what, we're 2-0 up. He doesn't need to play. Let's keep him an extra couple of days rest, a bit more recovery, and balance obviously that up against, we've got to start giving him minutes at some point so that he gets settled into the league and can hopefully start delivering in terms of sort of up front and actual sort of goals. I was thinking when I was looking at the notes for this and whatnot, I'd said to you a couple of weeks back that, again, a lot of people online seem to be thinking the minute Nkunku comes back, you know, we're going to be in 50 goals each game. It's going to be brilliant. We're going to be. I think he's a very good footballer and he's probably going to chip in with assists as well, but I don't think he's going to be a 2025 a season goal machine. And I said to you, I think he's a bit more good Johnson than Hasselbank, to which he said, bloody hell, I'd have that at the moment, which I think we all would. So I still think there's, you know, potentially room for a number nine. I see him as a sort of, what do they like to say, 9.5 or a 10 type thing. He can do sort of both, but you know, he's probably a bit better as a 10. So then you're saying about dropping people from midfield and sort of the forward roles. Once he comes back, that's another space gone, as it were, because clearly he's going to have to be the main man because he looks like probably the only one who's going to be able to put it in with any regularity up front, even if I'm saying he's not going to be sort of 20s odd. But a bit surprised he didn't get some minutes, but it's probably best decision sort of nurse him in gently.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly doesn't bode well too well for Jackson if he does come back and hit the ground running. Because, you know, you would, at the moment, given the way the team is playing and given that formation that we're playing, you know, there is only one room for one kind of an out and out striker.
Yeah, but I think also Jackson can play out wide, you know, and I think that's another option that we could have with him in the with the team. You know, with Villarreal, he was playing a lot of the season out wide, and if Mudrik's not cutting it and, you know, running around and doing a lot but not doing a lot, then we need to have players to rotate. And, you know, we've been really unlucky with injuries this season, and
we'll come back to that.
it's not unheard of that, you know, Sterling or Palmer or one of these other forwards gets an injury. Sure. And I think we could see Jackson maybe not in that pressure number nine spot to get goals.
Sure. Yeah, which could be the making of him, of course. Or it could certainly get a lot of people off his back if he's not kind of like the, you know, well, you know, if he's not the main, you know, he needs to shine in other ways. But if we're not looking at him and thinking, why aren't you scoring every game? Or, you know, why are you missing chances every game, then maybe a role slightly off the main striker or a bit wider would take the pressure off him a little bit. But you touched on Mudrik. I mean, just briefly, we do tend to talk about him quite a lot in here. And, you know, I said to you, didn't I, by message on Saturday, I so want him to do well. And actually, looking back at the game, he had moments of where, you know, moments where you really saw that he's got a bit of quality about him. Not least his absolutely blistering pace, going past people a couple of times. But, you know, in the second half even, there were a few really nice little layoffs, turning, laying the ball off back into the centre of the pitch. Obviously, there isn't as much end product as we like from him yet. There tends to be in every game as much bad as there is good. How long do we think he gets? I mean, do we see him starting against Newcastle, for example?
I think you'll probably see Maduaki starting over him for Newcastle because he needs
back from injury? No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. The injury thing. So we must talk about that in a minute as well, because, I mean, that just seems to be, you know, it's just like you just think, what have we done with these players? Because, you know, when you're originally told it could be 6 weeks and then they're out for, like, you know, they've been out for 2.5 months. Anyway, but Mudrik is, you know, there's flashes of brilliance. What I suppose I'm saying is, do we think we have time? Do we think we can afford him the time to play himself into being the player that we know he can become? I mean, he's very young, again.
Yeah, I think we do, because unless we win tomorrow, the season's fucked. So, like, so you know, as long as we don't get relegated, then we'll be, you know, we'll play.
Welcome once again to the optimistic podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, no, I mean, I think we'll do well tomorrow. I think if we get past, then we've got a real chance at winning something in Poch's first season here, which I think is really important. Mm. And you know, even though it's the League Cup, it's okay, cool. It buys time. It is silverware. It is a tick. And the players have got something that, you know, they can celebrate.
Oh, it would be massive. I mean, it would be disastrous for me because I put my holiday starting on the 20th of February. So, but you know, not that I wouldn't want them to get there, of course.
No, but, no. But I think what I'm trying to say is that, like, this season is a transition season. We're not going to be in the top four.
No, of course not.
So we need to get the players playing. Get the players we want to see develop playing,
yeah.
And that's my sort of opinion on it. And I think we will see more of Mudryk. We'll give him the time to really sort of let loose in the Prem, and yeah, hopefully have a better player next year.
Much as anything else, it's not like anybody else is really staking a claim to that position, is it? So he's quite lucky in that regard that there isn't somebody, every time he doesn't play, they come on and play an absolute stormer, and it feels like we're trying to crowbar him in because we paid a load of money for him.
But the thing is, there are so many players who are sort of central or central midfield or outright, and we know that Sterling can go and play over on the left if he has to. And I see him being sacrificed and Raheem being put in over on the left so that we can fit in Enzo, Gallagher, Caicedo, Palmer, possibly Lavia. You know, Nkunku, Permany, 4 or 5 from 8, you know. So, I mean, yeah, I think you're all right. I think you're both right, though. I mean, let's say, of course, we should be giving him time. You know, you can't just be discarding a player totally. And there will be some rotation. When players are fitter, I think there'll be some rotation, and that's fine. And I think he'll play his part, even if he's not necessarily in there every week. But talking about... talking about building confidence, I mean, that was actually the first time I was devastated to hear that we'd won back-to-back PL games in over a year. I mean, I there's a lot of noise about, you know, if you can't enjoy a win, what's the matter? And I did enjoy it. And especially, it was nice to get that feeling post-match and save, not have your weekend ruined. But of course, it was only Sheffield United. And they were, as you said, Jack, one of the worst teams that we've seen in a long time here. But did we do enough, particularly in the second half, to build confidence, to build back a bit of confidence after, you know, recent mishaps going into this Christmas period? Are you feeling more confident? Did we do enough to show that we it might not actually just be a waste of a season?
I feel probably yes. I mean, as much as anything else, because you think it would have been much more devastating if we'd managed to balls it up again. And the fact that for once we didn't, for even like, you know, when we went 1-0 up sort of thing, there was still a case of, you still sort of felt, because we've been so poor this season, one goal wasn't going to be enough. And against a team that barely attacked all game, but you just thought anything can happen. So the fact that it was so comfortable, I'm hoping the players do take a little bit of confidence from it, because they're going to need it. And it doesn't matter that it's just Sheffield United, which is absolutely true. You still can only beat what's in front of you, and we finally managed to beat them, so that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can't really complain, can we, given that it has been so long that we've had two home games.
Oh, I don't know, I managed to usually find time to complain.
Yes, I think we probably were a bit in the pub afterwards. I mean, let's just touch back on the injury list as well, and say it does just seem insane to me that you know, that someone like, so Chukwuemeka, for example, we were told when he was out in, whenever it was, early to mid-September,
wasn't it? Yeah,
that he was going to be 6 weeks. And then we get these very cryptic comments on the on the website, on the official website, about, you know, there being he's had a setback, and he's continuing, he's on with his ongoing rehabilitation, you know, which mm-hmm. has been pointed out elsewhere is a complete waste of time. You know, you might as well not tell us anything.
Yeah.
At Lavia has a foot and ankle issue. It seems to have been now about 6 weeks that he sort of said, oh, he's nearly there. It might just take a little bit more time. Yeah. Should we be concerned about all this, chaps? I mean, it's very hard to say, you know, we haven't got a crystal ball. We don't know what's going on, but you know, it doesn't seem to get any shorter. Our injury list, and people never seem to be any closer. Trevor Chalobah. I mean, all right, I know he's not been part of the squad, but these guys are not, they don't, it's been like months and months for some of these guys.
I don't know. I don't know if it's Poch protecting the players from coming in too early, and he knows that the pressure's on, and you know, you don't want to sort of blood someone too early, and you know, and they're not quite ready, or if there's other factors and there's a culture problem at the club, or if it's just that players are just playing too much football and they are just getting injured a lot more often than they were 5-10 years ago. It's a more physical game, whereas, you know, it's more 11 of the best athletes rather than 11 of the best footballers, and you know, when you're you know, exerting that much sort of strain on your body in training and on the pitch in competitive matches, that you're just going to get more and more little nicks, niggles, and twinges and whatnot. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's the thing as well that, you know, he is supposedly quite you know, a hard taskmaster in training. Not that I don't necessarily mean to the point that people are getting injuries because of that, but that might, you know, there might be a little bit more sort of
frequency to them.
Yeah, I think so. They're just, the aggravations, you know, the things that people coming back from things might have, you know, might just take a little bit longer to get back to that level of intensity. Let's put it that way.
But we used to have such a great sort of physio and medical squad. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We'd always just, people would be back early, it seemed.
Mm.
And I don't know what's happened. I don't know if it was just Mourinho, Roman's sort of magic. I don't know, some KGB sort of.
Horse placentas and stuff like that.
Sort of
stem cell recovery.
Some
blood spinning
Sputnik sort of technology and shit like that. But it seems to have gone, and we've just got the American health system now, which is just painful.
Having said that, Poch today said that we could get 20 minutes of Nkunku against Newcastle, which is nice. I still don't think Lavia is going to be back. How do you feel going into this? How do you feel going to this Newcastle match? We're recording the day before, but you'll probably be hearing this on the day of the match. It actually seems like, despite their win at the weekend, it seems like quite a decent time to play them. I mean, I think they're probably the one club in the Premier League who's got an injury list that's worse than ours. Mm. And they lost Fabian Scher at the weekend, and also...
isn't he Lachelle's injured as well, I think?
Yeah, and Isaac didn't play, who I think is a really good player, plays a wicked game. Isaac.
I get it.
sorry. And he's Callum Wilson, who obviously is himself a bit of a sick note. He played the weekend. I don't know what the significance was of that, but and of course they've lost Nick Pope and Martin Dubravka's in. So are we feeling a bit more, are we feeling like we can, you know, reverse what was a bit of a shambles of a fixture up in the league, up at St. James's Park?
I think with the League Cup, it's always a bit hard to predict it more than any other because the amount of changes both managers tend to put into games. That said, with both teams having such big injury lists, can there be the usual 8 or 9 changes to the weekend really be implemented? I wouldn't have thought so. So, I mean, if we play our strongest team that we can, injuries permitting and all that, I'd feel confident that we'd be able to do something against them at home. They look a bit leg weary because of their injury list. We've at least got more bodies than them in terms of maybe not always necessarily in terms of quality, but we seem to be, you know, a much bigger squad in terms of numbers. So I think we'd hopefully be able to at least outrun them, you know, and even if they keep it tight for a sort of an hour or so, that eventually they're going to get tired and we break them down and maybe ease to a sort of 2-0 win again or something. It would work for me.
I think being at home obviously is going to make a difference. Yeah. You know, we'll have had a little bit more rest than Newcastle, of course, because of that. and they will be affected. There's no question they are going to be affected by losing yet another defender. I'm weirdly feeling like we could nick it off them. And as I say, partly that is to do with the fact that I can just see us getting to the final now just to spite me, as of as I'm not going to be able to go. Mooch, are you... I mean, there's 9-0. Other players... there's other players who maybe, you know, will be coming back as well. Malagusto was obviously on the bench. And I think, although Di Zarzi seemed, for me, had a reasonable game and got forward a lot more than he had been previously.
What are your thoughts on Petrovic? Sort of his sort of.
It's hard to draw a conclusion. He didn't really get much to do, did he? To show.
How long is Sanchez out for? What is?
Well, I saw somewhere that said early January he'd be back. I think it's a few weeks. I mean, the games that we've got coming up, which will. Discussed in our preview show. I mean, again, it's easy to say, but they're all eminently winnable. But they're games that I would have thought that, with the possible exception of Palace, and only the possible exception of Palace, we're not going to be playing teams who I feel are really likely to be peppering the goal with goals with shots. I mean, Luton are a big, bustling, you know, athletic side, but they're not scoring an absolute shed ton of goals.
Be interesting to watch how particularly Petrovic deals with them on set pieces.
Yeah.
They like crowding the keeper as well. So that'd be a good test for him, I think.
I mean, in that respect, obviously Sanchez is a big loss. I mean, that's the one place where I think, you know, on crosses, he really does seem to dominate his box. Obviously we all know his distribution's pretty poor, but, yeah, and Georgie didn't get to have to make too many pressured kicks, so we can't even tell if he's an upgrade on that. But I thought he had a solid game. He did everything that he was asked to do. I hope tomorrow doesn't become, you know, a real kind of red letter day for him. I hope it isn't like a question of him, us being back to the wall and him having to, you know, to sort of stand or fall, his reputation stand or fall on that game. But it's a run of games that I don't think we should be worried about him appearing in, certainly.
Hopefully eased in gently, as it were.
Yeah, ish. And I say tomorrow is the one sort of slight outlier on that front, but we'll see. Let's get a little preview, because as I say, we're not going to do a preview of Newcastle. Let's have an honest reflection of scores. Jack, what do you reckon? You could come up with a little prediction for us? What do you reckon it's going to be?
Yeah, I'm going to go with what I sort of said earlier on. I think it'll probably be very tight, a bit closer than I particularly want it to be, but because of they've got fewer bodies than us, they'll start to get tired and we'll sort of get a couple of late goals, 2-0.
I'd be happy with that. Mooch, how about you, mate?
I don't think it's going to be 2-0. I think there'll be a goal in it. I think it'll be 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree, but for the sake of variation, I'm going to say it'll be 1-1, and then Georgie will be the hero in the spot kicks, and we'll beat him on pens, and march on to a semi-final, possibly against a lower division team. All right, lads. Well, let's bring this one to the close, and we'll speak to you all again to talk about the preview of the Wolves game. Jack, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem.
Good to have you, Mooch. Good to see you as ever, mate.
Yeah.
All right.
It didn't sound convincing. It has to be.
No, no, and no, he's. I'm doing it by rote now. He knows that. And if you're going to the game tomorrow night, tonight it will be by the time you hear this, enjoy it and keep the blue flag flying high. We'll see you soon.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.